We are the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short.
Hello, welcome to the Papers podcast series for the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short. I'm Jo Carlo, a freelance journalist with a specialism in psychology. In this series, we speak to authors of papers published in one of ACAM's three journals. These are the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry, commonly known as JCPP, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health, known as CAM, and JCPP Advances. Today I'm interviewing Professor Gorda Kanyushunita of the Institute of Psychology, Mykolas Remeris University, Vilnius, Lithuania, and Professor Brett Lauerson of the Department of Psychology, Florida Atlantic University, USA. Gorda and Brett are authors of the paper Maternal Disapproval of Friends in Response to Child Conduct Problems Damages the Peer Status of Pre- and Early Adolescents, published in the JCPP. This paper will be the focus of today's podcast. If you're a fan of our Papers podcast series, please subscribe on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know how we did with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues. All listeners to this, and indeed any of the ACAM podcasts, are eligible for a free CPD certificate. Do please visit acamlearn.org for details of this, together with information on how you can access hundreds of hours of free talks, lectures, interviews, all of which you can also get free CPD certificates for. The URL is www.acamhlearn.org. Gorda and Brett, thanks for joining me. Can you start with an introduction about who you are and what you do?
So, as you introduced, I'm a professor at Mykolas Remeris University. My main research focuses on adolescents, peer relations, and relationship with parents. Me and my group are working with this or related to developmental psychology topics for almost a decade.
Okay, and Brett?
Brett Lauerson at Florida Atlantic University. I'm editor of or co-editor of the handbook on peer interactions, relationships, and groups, and also the former editor of the International Journal of Behavioral Development and the incoming editor of the Merrill Palmer Quarterly. I've been doing research on peer relationships for my entire career, and I also look at parent-child relationships and the interplay between the two. We've been focusing, Gorda and I, on these results from a big longitudinal studies that we've been conducting jointly between the two of us, where the children in Lithuania and children in Florida have been conducting the completing the same surveys for a series of years, several times a year. And the project we're about to talk about is from one small part of this study.
Great, thank you very much. So we're going to focus on that today, which is your JCPP paper, Maternal Disapproval of Friends in Response to Child Conduct Problems Damages the Peer Status of Pre- and Early Adolescents. Can you start with an overview of the paper? What did you look at and why?
So we looked at how maternal efforts to intervene with problematic peer relations by prohibiting friendships or activities with friends are interrelated with subsequent status among peers and eventually conduct behavioral problems. So specifically, mothers who responded to behavior problems with expression of disapproval of friends inadvertently damaged the child's relations with peers, alienating classmates.
Okay. Brett, was there something you wanted to add?
We found this vicious circle where mothers responded to children's behavior problems with increasing prohibition, and the prohibition drove down the child's relations with their peers, had them acting out more, which led to more maternal disapproval and so on. So there isn't a start or a stop to this process. Mothers respond to children's behavior with disapproval, and the disapproval ends up producing more child misbehavior, and so on it goes.
It's fascinating. We'll dig a bit more into the findings shortly. But before we do that, can you tell us a little bit about the methodology used for the study?
So as Brett already mentioned, this was a part of the big project, big longitudinal study, which we conducted both in Lithuania and in Florida. And kids responded to the same questions here and there. But this particular project is based only on Lithuanian data. So in Lithuania, we conducted this longitudinal study in one mid-sized town, and where all schools from this town was invited to participate in the study. So we have the community sample. Then after, of course, acquiring parental consents, we assess students three times during one academic year. So autumn, winter, and fall, beginning, middle, and end of a school year. Students filled the questionnaires on tablets. First, they had to nominate the classmates on number of qualities, who is liked or disliked, who is popular. And then they answered questions about themselves and then about their relationship with mothers. So we had both self-reports and peer reports about this more or less same qualities.
One of the terms that you use in the paper, you talk about low peer status. I just wondered what that looks and feels like from the child's perspective.
And so when we talk about peer status, we talk about the way that the group views the child or the child's position in the group. And there's a number of ways to look at peer status. One is how much the group in general likes or dislikes a child. We're using these liking and disliking measures as an index of status. We're not measuring popularity. So it's important to say that when we talk about popularity, we literally talk about someone who has dominance in the group. We measure that by literally asking who's popular. Who's popular is not necessarily all that closely tied to who's liked and who's disliked. So let's be clear that what we're not measuring is popularity. What we're measuring is liking and disliking. We have two measures of that. So what we call acceptance is how many people in the group say that they like the child. Everybody gets a score for how many others in the group nominated them as someone they liked. And everybody gets a score for disliking, how many in the group say that they don't like a child. Our status measures are indices of essentially affect that the group directs towards the child. How many others can say that they have positive feelings toward the child, and how many have negative feelings toward the child?
And do children have awareness of how they're ranked?
Oh, yes. Children are keenly aware of their status in the group, and they know, and everybody else has a pretty good sense for how much a child is liked or disliked by other members of the group. So it's not necessarily a measure of friendship. That friendship is a reciprocal measure. You and I are friends, and you may only have one friend or many friends. This is an index of the group's view towards the child.
So I'm wondering, what types of things were mothers doing to show their disapproval, and how did this impact their children?
Kids responded about their mother's disapproval with self-report. So they answered the questions about the mother's behavior. And is the behavior like expressing their disliking for certain friends or friend group, trying to forbid seeing certain kids or make obstacles for friends maybe to meet, criticizing friends and friends' behavior and maybe putting their opinions who their kids should be friends with instead.
Okay, so let's look more specifically at the findings now. What are the key findings from the paper that you would like to highlight?
So I think the most important is the role of mothers, and that such behavior in response to already existing behavioral problems can, in fact, increase such behavior even more. And the process of it is through the social standing among the peers.
I would add to that by saying a few years ago, there was a very small study that found that maternal disapproval was tied to problem behaviors, and it caused people to kind of scratch their heads. It was a small study. We weren't sure what to do with it, what it meant. And this was kind of the leaping off point for our study, because first of all, we wanted to see if it really was the case that maternal disapproval was really causing children to act badly. And then more importantly, why? How does that work? So we were first able to replicate the finding that maternal disapproval does lead to subsequent greater behavior problems. And we were able to tie that to decreases in peer status. And both maternal disapproval was tied to less liking by the peer group, which was then tied to greater behavior problems. But even more, maternal disapproval was tied to greater peer rejection, which was tied to behavior problems. So of the two peer status variables, the link to rejection was much stronger than the link to acceptance, which is important because it suggests that the peer group really doesn't like the fact that mothers are meddling. It's not that it kind of means that people are a little bit more ambivalent about you. There's some active rejection going on when of the child when the peer group finds out that moms are prohibiting peer affiliates.
Can we dig a bit more into the why? Because what you're talking about from the paper, this is parents' well-meaning attempts to steer their children away from peers that they perceived as delinquent in some way, a bad influence, and you're saying it proved counterproductive, and in fact it exacerbated conduct problems in their own children. So I'm trying to sort of get to the bottom of the why. Why did this type of parental interference prove so counterproductive?
Before I turn this over to Goda, let me take this opportunity to say that we are in no way, shape, or form blaming parents for their behavior. What parents are doing here is perfectly understandable, completely what one would expect a parent to do. It makes perfectly good sense that parents would do this. It's just that it has counterproductive effects. And so we don't think that parents are somehow doing something malevolent or bad here. It's just that these well-intentioned behaviors are really counterproductive, and alternative solutions are more appropriate. So having said that, let's dive into what's happening. But I want to make sure what we say right up front that we don't think that parents are behaving in ways that are meaningfully maladaptive. This is an unintentional byproduct of a well-intentioned behavior. Goda, you want to jump in?
Yeah, so we have several interpretations. So one maybe is related to social capital, and like losing friends decreases the social capital. And then, yeah, of course, kids might act out because of that. Or then when losing friends, kids might be more susceptible to peer influence just to keep the friends that they still have. Maybe it's not the best behaving friends, or they want to make friends with the new friends and there's only a few options left. Maybe Brett, you wanted to elaborate.
I mean, that's perfectly, that explains one step in the link. And of course, the other step is why does lower status lead to more behavior problems? A two-step problem. One is, why does status go down when mothers meddle? And the other is, why does lower status lead to greater behavior problems? On the first front, as Goda essentially successfully summarized, that part of the problem is how peers interpret the meddling, and part of the problem is the potential consequences of that meddling. If you lose friends, that's bad, but it also is a loss of face. When we're talking about children in middle school, at this age, there's a shift in their perceptions of who's in charge of my friends. Children are used to the idea that their parents might manage their peer relationships, but middle schoolers start to resist that idea. And once you start to resist it, that means everybody else is starting to resist it. And so everybody in the peer group is starting to view this choice as I get to pick my friends. And if you are seen as somebody whose mom still picks your friends, that's immature, that's uncool. That's also a headache. Who wants to try to negotiate with somebody whose mom is deciding, well, what they get to do over the weekend?
For sure. And just to clarify, middle school refers to exactly which ages?
Our study included the kids like ranging from 9 to 14, but yeah, it's most 10, 12.
Given your findings, what advice do you have for parents who disapprove of their children's friends?
The first point I would make is that you don't want to get in a position where it's you versus friends, because by the time we're talking about the early adolescent years, this is not a battle that parents are necessarily going to win. Young adolescents spend most of their time in the peer group. Peers are increasingly important at this age. And in fact, if not now, then in another year or two, most children will report that they're closer to their friends than they are to their parents. And so putting yourself in a position where it's me versus your friends is not necessarily going to be a winning proposition for most parents. And I'll make one more point that's important. The people who influence us the most are the people with whom we are closest. And so, if you're going to start a lot of fights with your child, if there's going to be a lot of negativity on your relationship with your child, they're going to start to tune you out. And you're not going to carry any kind of influence with them in terms of making important decisions. So, it's critical during these years that parents do what they can to maintain close, supportive relationships with their children. Now, I'm not saying at all that they should just approve of everything. That kind of laissez-faire parenting is not at all what we're advocating. It's perfectly reasonable for parents to set boundaries, to set limits, to communicate, I'm doing this because I care. This is why. When you demonstrate autonomy, we give you more. When you violate those expectations, we give you less. All of that's very good behavior. But increases in negativity and increases in conflict are just going to tune the child out. And that's part of the problem with disapproving of friends is, on the one hand, you pit yourself against the friends, and on the other hand, you're just generating conflict that you're not going to win. And so it's important to essentially take a step back and think about the relationship ramifications of what you're doing and figuring out ways to maintain positive relationships, because the only way they're going to pay any attention to what you have to say is if they come to you and ask you for advice. Unsolicited advice, doesn't matter what age it is, unsolicited advice is rarely welcomed and even less often followed. And so, what you want to do is you want to have a close enough relationship with your child that they're going to come to you with problems and questions about how to solve things. You can take proactive steps. If you're not happy with the friends that your child has, you can create structured opportunities for them to affiliate with people that you think might be pos more positive influences. You can get them membership to clubs and activities where there's other adult supervision going on. You can do these kinds of other ways of trying to structure peer interactions, not trying to exclude the ones you don't like, but rather trying to include those that you think might be positive influences over your child.
What are the implications of your findings for CAM professionals?
I'm going to start with one point, and then I'll see if Goda has something she wants to chime in. We didn't talk very much about about the fact that children with low peer status end up having a lot of behavior problems. We focused on parent behaviors that seem to drive down status and parent behaviors that seem to create these behavior problems. But why does low status create difficulties for child behavior? There's a number of answers to this, but first of all, think about the child in the peer group. Children in peer groups, they need friends, and they don't want to be at the very bottom of the order. They don't want to be excluded from the peer group. So, on the one hand, children who are rejected, who are disliked by many others, have a very difficult time making friends. The harder it is for you to make friends, the more likely you are to make friends with someone who's not going to be necessarily a good influence on you. Because children in middle school or in the middle school age will do anything in order to avoid being friendless. And so, because they don't want to be friendless, they're going to make friends with whoever they can. And children who have low status end up making friends with other children with low status. And that often involves children with behavior problems. And so, that's one reason why it's so important that parents don't do anything to drive their status down, because it essentially forces them to pick among us, to pick friends among those that essentially the parents wouldn't say, that's who I want you to be your friends. The other problem is that in a peer group, the other thing that you never want to have happen is you never want to be tossed out of the peer group. You never want to be left out or left behind. Once again, as your peer status goes down, you're less likely to be invited to parties, you're less likely to be included in activities. All these sorts of things cause trouble in the peer group. What does this have to do with behavior problems? The answer is that if you're hanging around with children who already have problems, if you don't have any friends, if you're left out of the peer group, this is stressful. This is challenging. Remember, this is an age period in which the peer group is ascendant, is primary in terms of importance. And so we're talking about a period in time in which you really don't want to be left behind. And we get a lot of acting out as a consequence for children who are behaving badly, for children who are rejected. We get a lot of affiliating with other kids who have behavior problems as a consequence. And we get a lot of internalizing problems, depression, anxiety. And so, to circle back to your question, professionals need to be really tuned in to what's happening in the peer group. I want to make this about parents, but we overlook the fact that this is a very challenging age for for youth because we toss them into these circumstances, these school environments that are dominated by peers, and then we promptly forget that we've tossed them into an environment that's dominated by peers, and sometimes then we do things that make it very hard for them to navigate these world. And so helping children navigate this challenging peer environment is going to help mitigate a lot of the behavior problems that professionals are going to encounter.
Are you planning any follow-up research, or is there anything else in the pipeline that you would like to share with us?
Well, of course, we have a lot of ideas. We are looking where if this maternal behavior can actually disrupt the friendship, not like drive the peer status down, but like actually end an existing friendship. And the other thing, we started asking our participants about their relationship with fathers and fathers prohibiting behavior. So maybe we will be able to answer that question as well.
We have a hint that some mothers at least may be successful in their efforts to disrupt friendships. We're not ready to go out on a limb on that yet, but our preliminary peek suggests that if that's their goal, they may be successful.
Thank you both. Finally, what are your take-home messages for our listeners?
I would say the take-home message is that parents need to be sensitive to the knock-on effects of their interactions with their children. And by that, I mean downstream effects that arise from what is seemingly well-intentioned innocuous behaviors. If we forget that the child has to navigate in a world full of peers, and we're only thinking about what we think would be best, we might do things that have consequences for how the child interacts with others that we haven't at all thought about. You could make all kinds of silly examples, but if you made your child wear a pink hat to school, they might get ridiculed, and you wouldn't want to do that. and similarly, though, we might do other things that might bring reactions from the peer group and unintended consequences that we haven't thought through completely. I think that's my take-home message, is that it's quite easy for adults to forget how challenging this age period is and how absolutely essential getting along with age mates is, because we passed through it and are now thinking about other things. Their children are not through that yet, and they, like everyone, is trying to figure out a way to successfully maneuver through what's a brand new environment, an environment in which everybody's equal, and there's no adult essentially monitoring what everybody's doing when you're hanging around with your age mates.
Adding to that, maybe I would like to stress the already what Brett mentioned earlier, that the importance of fostering close, warmth and trusting relationship with the children, really important.
Brilliant. That sounds so important. For more details, please visit acamlearn.org. The URL is www.acamhlearn.org. And don't forget to follow us on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know if you enjoyed the podcast with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues.